Welcome to the Georgia FinTech Academy podcast. The Georgia FinTech Academy is a collaboration between Georgia's fintech industry and the University System of Georgia. This talent development initiative addresses a massive demand for fintech professionals and gives learners the specialized education experiences needed to enter the fintech
sector. Hello, everybody. This is Tommy Marshall, the executive director of the Georgia FinTech Academy, and this is episode 26 of the Georgia FinTech Academy podcast. Today's show, we're gonna tell you a bit more about the Georgia FinTech Academy courses. We've had a great, obviously, 25 episodes to date. We've had some wonderful executive guests from the industry come on and talk with students. And we thought it was high time that we took a moment to talk a bit more about the Georgia FinTech Academy courses. Who better to do that than Dr. Jonathan Godby, who is one of the founding professors of the Georgia FinTech Academy. And he's joined today by Enrique Pujols, who's also a Georgia State student. Welcome to you both.
Oh, thanks for having us, Tommy.
Thank you for having us.
Jonathan, talk to us about yourself and your career and how you discovered this wonderful world of fintech.
All right, so I went to Alabama for undergrad and then went in the real world working for Ernst & Young for a few years. Decided to go get my PhD at the University of Georgia, thinking I would go to Wall Street and live the Wall Street life. And different events happened and I decided to go into academia and was teaching in quantitative finance, or sometimes called financial engineering. So I've always had a kind of an engineering mindset and worked some with cybersecurity. And several years ago, when Bitcoin first kind of came out, taking a look at blockchain, what Bitcoin was really fascinating. And then I guess it was a few years ago when they were first talking about starting the FinTech Academy, my department head came to me and said, hey, would you like to teach in the FinTech courses and develop them? And I've had a lot of fun learning the science of learning and how to teach concepts and develop courses. So it was a really attractive invitation for me. And then, Tommy, that's when you and I met. I went to a FinTech conference, right? And we were lost.
You and I were lost together at the Carter Center trying to find our meeting.
Yes.
Just started chatting. That fate brought us together.
Right. And that was before you were the executive director. And one of the things I said I would love to have in the core executives from around the state in FinTech and have an interview style course with that. And you said, come by my office. Came by your office a couple weeks later and gave me a list of what felt like 1,000 names. And they all, I said, Tommy Marshall wanted me to contact you. And they all agreed to speak in my class. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the story of how the class got started.
Yeah, that's great. That was fun. I remember that fondly, our meeting at the Carter Center. That was it was an Asia Pacific, I guess Hong Kong kind of fintech, because there was a group from a Hong Kong delegation that was in town and we were doing a program around that and specific to fintech. I'll mention that you are a professor of finance at Georgia State in the Robinson School of Business, which is an esteemed, of course, business school and then renowned finance program. And I've honestly just continued to be really blown away by the depth of talent and expertise in the Robinson School in a variety of different disciplines. And you and I both participated in the academic fintech conference that was put on by several of your colleagues back in February, which brought in really very impactful fintech focused academic work, research that was profiled from really all over the country, which was really there's just so many remarkable assets that we have to bring to bear to the industry from this perspective.
And one of our guys, Belzong Yang, is one of the leading academics in fintech, and one of the leading finance journals would do a special conference, and that's the one you were referring to, on FinTech, and have a special issue on FinTech. So we really had the top guys from academia in the field near that conference. Mm-hmm. And Georgia State's one of the few schools that has the depth of researchers and cares about teaching. It's really a unique blend. A lot of schools have great researchers and teaching is an afterthought. And you have a lot of schools with great teachers that never research. Mm-hmm. We have a, like I said, a very unique blend, I think.
Mm-hmm. Enrique, how's Georgia State been for you?
Georgia State's been fantastic. Thank you for having me on, Tommy, once again. Hopefully people remember me being on a few weeks back. But just to go over who I am and why I'm on the podcast, I'm an accounting and finance major at Georgia State University, minoring in international business. And I haven't taken any of the courses yet, but hopefully I will be able to in the near future. I know Tommy's put a lot of work into those, and they seem like they're very, very good, very high quality, and definitely relevant to today's market trends. So something that has interested me in fintech recently has really been the concept of financial services moving to online platforms. You know, you have like robo advisors and other things really entering the market at a rapid pace. You have other industries like law, right? You have like robo advisors for that, like LegalZoom. And I think that's very interesting for me, at least, not only because I'm an accountant, but also because there's a huge market for online services, which very much interests me. So I'm glad to be on the podcast again, and it's good to meet you, Dr. Godby.
Nice to meet you, Enrique.
Well, Enrique, we're going to see if we can close the deal today and get you so pumped up about these FinTech Academy courses that you're gonna feel like there's really no excuse for not enrolling as soon as the enrollment window opens, which is in 2 weeks.
All right. I'll get on it, Tommy.
So let's get into that. We really do want to talk about the courses that are offered, and then of course we can go in great depth on your course, Dr. Godby, Foundations of FinTech. But I guess to recap, there's five courses that we've initially built that are part of the FinTech Academy offering, and the focus is on undergraduate students today. And those five courses are your course, Dr. Godby, Foundations of FinTech, Financial Technologies, which is taught by Dr. John Martin, Financial Data Analytics, taught by Rasha Ashraf, Banking and FinTech, taught by Rich Findler, and then lastly is Information Security in FinTech, taught by Kurt Harbor. And there was a lot of work that went in to deciding what should be the first five courses for the FinTech Academy. There was multiple discussions with different industry partners, asking them directly, you know, what would you like to see students learning about related to different aspects of financial services technology? What would, if students were taking this course, what courses could students take that would make them ever more attractive to these financial services technology providers as employees? Was an important question that we got a lot of input on. And when we distilled that down, we came to these, choosing these five courses. And the work continues. There are additional undergraduate credit courses that are in development right now. There's a series we're going to offer starting in the fall related to digital payments that we're all very excited about and look forward to bringing forward onto the FinTech Academy platform. And then we've just started development very recently on another two or three courses that will relate to artificial intelligence and FinTech. So you can see that, you know, as we haven't stopped at five, we're continuing to add, develop and add to the platform. But Jonathan, I'm really interested to hear your perspective as you've been on this journey from the beginning, and maybe overall, you know, those five courses, and then certainly what's it been like developing the Foundations of FinTech course that you teach?
So it's very different. So for example, Enrique, you're now in the Intro Finance course, which I've taught for many years. I've taught at different universities. It really hasn't changed since I took it in 1990. I mean, it's been tweaked here and there. It's the same course basically at every university in the country. Very little differences, very little change. But this course, all five of these, we change them almost constantly. So we are meeting with industry partners, the different professors in these five courses, having individual meetings with industry partners this next week, saying, here's what we've done. How would you tweak it? And we've already, as Tommy said earlier, we already went to them and, well, what do we need in there now? So we're constantly updating and changing because FinTech, updating and changing. Mm-hmm. And one of the most exciting things that we do is the partnerships that we have with different companies that come in and do projects together. So, Enrique, this is a real, here's the pitch, right? You should be in the course. We've had, in the semesters I've taught it, we've had Elavon Financial, Wells Fargo, Toyo Financial Services, FIS. Mm-hmm. Each do projects with my students, real projects, where they want real answers to, not some high school research paper that you do the night before. So you're interacting with those guys. You're learning the rhythm of corporate life. And they're just fascinating projects to do. And at the end, we had some really cool stuff, particularly in the summer, mm-hmm. that we came up with.
Okay, that sounds like a pretty good pitch. Something that I would say that really sells me on the idea of taking one of these courses, as you mentioned, is really getting to know those industry partners and coming up with real world solutions. Sometimes it's difficult to apply what you learn in the classroom to real world examples, and having that embedded in the class curriculum is really important. And I think that's really, really cool. So,
yeah, it's as real world as we can get, even to the point of there's confidentiality agreements that we talk about. You're meeting with the industry partners, the corporate people, and, you know, we're having to do it on Zoom. I'm having to teach students, like, here's Microsoft Teams, here's Zoom, here's WebEx, whichever one these guys want to use. And it's really beyond just the FinTech. And one of the things with the Foundations of FinTech, there's so much that you're not getting all in one semester. And we are giving you kind of a flavor. And then particularly with John Martin's Financial Technologies class and Rich Findler's Banking and FinTech class, the three of us are meeting next week along with Tommy to look back at our courses again. It's not the first time we've done it, and say, what can we change? How do we deliver this better? What do we do? Because there's some chicken and egg problem. We need to show this concept before that concept. So unlike most courses where it's just one and done, fire and forget, it's constantly being updated and changed. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of coordination. And one more thing, like with the projects this semester, the Banking and FinTech course is doing a project with the same company that my Foundations course is. So the Foundations kids will present to the Banking and FinTech kids, and I'm now old enough to call them kids, you know, which is sad. So the Banking and FinTech students will present to the Foundation students, so they will learn kind of both projects at once. You're doing one, you're teaching the other, and you as a student, Enrique, would give feedback to other students before they're really doing the presentation before the C-suite level, or the, you know, the leadership team of the different companies. Mm-hmm. So we spend some time making sure it's polished.
But Jonathan, I just pulled up the kind of high level syllabus that I have from your course, and I just wanted to read out these eight modules. Okay. to give folks a sense of the content that's in the course. So there's, and the way often folks will say to me, or students will call me up and they're like, Tommy, what, you know, of these five, you know, where should I start? I love all these topic areas. And often I'll steer them directly to your course, Foundations of FinTech, initially. And I often will characterize it as, you know, it's a really nice sort of 101 summary of the fintech landscape. And the reason I say that is, like, as I look at the modules, there's a blockchain focused module where you're unpacking different aspects of distributed ledger technology and how it's being applied into financial services. The most predominant use case of the last 10 years with blockchain technology has been Bitcoin cryptocurrency. There's other cryptocurrencies, but Bitcoin certainly the oldest, over 11 years now. Then there's a module on payments, of course, critical, and many would say that area of financial services that is kind of been the most involved with the quote unquote topic of fintech from the outset. Then there's alternative lending and raising capital. Lending often is used as a phrase to apply to those types of non-bank financial engaged companies that are providing lending resources. So Cabbage that was recently sold to American Express is an example of an alt lender to the small business segment. Wealth management is a module. Digital banking and insurtech is a module. And so as I'm reading these out, you all get a sense that we're covering a lot of landscape in financial services and thinking about this idea of financial services technology and how it's relevant to all these different areas. How'd I do?
Perfect. So each one of those modules could be a course in and of itself. And for example, with the Cabbage founders came and recorded an interview for the class. So you're learning from them, how did they do this? What were their thought process? And also for the students in each executive interview, I end it with, give advice to the students. What would you, if you could go back to college senior you, what would you do differently? And what are you looking for from, you know, a recent college grad? So I get you where you don't really know alternative lending. You don't really know digital banking, but you know enough to know how to learn from there. So I'm trying to teach you to think critically. Here's the information. Here's the framework for this module. Now you can go and be light years ahead of someone who's not had the course. So if you just have my 2 weeks of payments and you go interview with a payments company, you're light years ahead of anyone else. Mm-hmm. But then if you go and take John Martin's financial technologies course, on top of that, you've really gone deep. Same thing with my banking module. You know enough that you understand what's going on and you can really impress someone in an interview and you can really start to learn what's going on in the space. But then you take Findler's banking and fintech course and you can take them at the same time, but you get a lot more depth. So I'm the generalist. I'm like the utility player and the other guys are the specialist.
Mm-hmm. Enrique, we cut you off.
No worries. I heard that you and a few of the other professors got together and had to make changes to some of the course curriculum every couple months or something like that?
Not quite that frequently, but very frequently.
In one way, I mean, believe it or not, I'm about to celebrate my 1 year anniversary in my role as the executive director. And I was kind of with you and the professors, I know, really early on, Jonathan, and certainly coming from 25 years in this industry, I was like, man, it's changing so frequently. Let me see how I could add in some programmatic elements to the FinTech Academy that would help you all as professors try to stay as close as possible to different developments and trends and whatnot, and also provide additional opportunities to students that have yet to take a course that are interested in this area of fintech in general, and give you some opportunities to come in and start to learn more and really get involved with some of the key topics. So what we did, and we've been very successful this fall semester in particular, is created an events program. Whereas now we offer an event every week and in throughout the fall semester. And in some cases, we're doing two a week. So, for instance, tonight, and today is the 15th of October, we'll have three senior venture capitalists that invest only in fintech, really throughout the country. These venture capitalists happen to be based here in Atlanta. They're going to come on and speak for an hour, hour and a half about venture capital. What is venture capital? How do they think about making investments? What are the portfolio companies that they have invested in fintech? And then have direct Q&A with the students, which is, you know, if you step back from that for a minute, that's remarkable. There are very, very few opportunities for students, honestly, anywhere in the United States of America, to have an opportunity to have a direct forum with really esteemed financiers in this part of our in this financial services technology industry. And then, of course, we record those sessions, and then I give those sessions to, like, you, Jonathan, and then you have that to work with in terms of incorporation into your course as you see fit. And it's becoming a virtuous cycle where we're having students get engaged in the events, we're collecting some meaningful content that, Jonathan, you can take care of or take advantage of. You, of course, are inviting your students that you do have to participate in these events as well. So we're just amplifying the entire educational experience in a multiple different ways.
So I want to go back to two things, Tommy. First of all, you said you're going to record it tonight. You make sure you do record. Hit that button.
There have been times I've forgotten to hit record. Yeah,
and I'm unable to attend tonight. And this is one of the top ones I want to see. But this is what you described is not normal. I was at another university where we were able to build a quantitative finance program that sent students to Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse, and we took a lot of time and a lot of effort to build that caliber of student. So the Goldman Sachs partner flew into our university, but we weren't at this level where they have so much opportunity not only to interact with the projects, but interact in these environments. So in like the changing of the course, I don't know what's going to be in the course because I don't know what's going to happen in the different events you're going to have next semester. We don't know the project that's going to happen next semester. So I don't know exactly where the focus will be. And one of the good things about having a generalist foundations course is we can kind of choose. This semester, we're going to focus on a blockchain project. This semester, we're going to focus on a banking project. This semester, on a payments project. We've done all of those. And it's just really, it's fun. Because for me, I don't know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen in my Excel course from now the next 10 years. It's already in my intro course. I just changed the dates every semester. So it is very, very fun. Students really need to realize it's not normal to have this much access to the caliber of people that we have.
Right, right. Dr. Godbee, just a little bit of a follow-up question to that. FinTech is relatively new, and the space is really, really growing like fast. So when there are innovations in the field, do you guys make changes to the course based on those innovations sometimes? Or how have you sort of played around with those innovations and new technologies?
Right. So great question. And I'm going to tell you that fintech is not new. And here's an example. In the early 1800s, there was a stock market in New York on Wall Street, where it currently is, and also one in Philadelphia. There was no smartphone. There was no telegram. You couldn't communicate between the two. So if a stock was selling for $80 in Philly and $100 in New York, there's an opportunity to make money, right? So these guys got simple four flags, like you would signal with a Navy ship, on tops of buildings and hilltops, and they sent price signals between Philly and New York. It took 45 minutes. That was fintech, because there's a financial principle. You can't have the same thing selling for two different prices. There was a technology, though crude, as a simple four flag, and there was an economic benefit. The guys that did it made a bunch of money. And then August of 2019, Goldman Sachs says we're spending, I think it was $100 million to shave milliseconds off trading time. Exact same thing, right? There's no difference. It's just a different, better technology and more time, and, you know, less time.
Fair
enough. How we do that, how we put that in is, there will be things that we're going to talk about in news later. So when a news event happens, I say, well, hey, guys, did you notice that Cabbage got bought out by MasterCard? It was MasterCard, right?
Amex.
See, and I got those little details wrong. I tell my students I do that on purpose so they can catch me and correct me. I really don't. So we'll talk about those things in class.
I love that you referred back in time like that. And I've got, there's a presentation that I created about 9 months ago called A Quick History of FinTech that I've been meaning to share with you. I haven't shared with you. I'm gonna do a special event around it. But I go back to 1867 in this presentation and refer to the American Telegraph Company, an engineer there that invented the stock ticker, which is a machine that utilizing the telegraph, you know, the beep, 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 to deliver stock price information. And I root the beginnings of fintech there in the first stock ticker that, of course, was critical to sharing information between traders around the United States that were looking to buy and sell stock equities in the market. So that's my starting point for that conversation.
Tommy, have you had a podcast dedicated to the history of fintech?
No, we need to do that.
That would be great.
That would probably be a good idea, because I know that a lot of people who listen to the podcast or think about fintech at all probably associate it, like me, with apps that they can get on their phones, like Robinhood or Acorns or other things like that, or payment processing companies, something like that, that's mostly digitally based, mm-hmm. Or at least utilizes technology that's fairly new.
Yeah.
But the systems that you're talking about are relatively old, right? So back to 1867, you said?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a great point, and that is totally understandable. I will usually start when a student like you, Enrique, is asking me what is fintech, you know, I will go immediately to, like, well, have you ever used Venmo? Or do you know what Robinhood is? And then, of course, you know, folks are like, oh, yeah, of course. I'm like, well, that's a very important financial services technology that is making your participation in financial services extremely accessible on your phone, you know, as an app. And that is, I think, a great place to start. And of course, you understand that and you can relate to it immediately. But then, you know, I think it's important that we begin to unpack that further and say, listen, there's fundamental aspects of how the entire financial services system work that are massively enabled by technology. And that too is fintech. And that's where we go very far back in history. And there's companies like Western Union. It was founded in 1851 and did its first money transfer in like 1871. There's companies like Fiserv that, you know, had meaningful data processing that they were doing in the early 80s. MasterCard and Visa, those really relevant entities on their own. Visa started in 1958 as part of Bank of America, MasterCard in 1966, right? I mean, these companies have been with us for generations now and we talk about that rate of change. They've been in this nonstop kind of rate of really rapid change and evolution that just continues and enables some really remarkable capabilities for all of us as consumers and businesses to take advantage of financial services.
We can go back to the Medici family and Luca Pacioli, who came up with the double entry accounting, and the Medici family started banking.
Right.
Yeah. I thought, you know, like random things like the word bank comes from the Italian word for bench. And that was really, it goes back to, is there a technology that can do it? Is there a financial benefit? And do I understand, is there economic benefit? And is there a science of finance that makes this something that should be done? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is trust. That today, trust is needed just as much as it was at any point in human history. Just how is that changing with technology? Because all the issues are exactly the same. And sometimes it's easier to see them in an old setup rather than the technology, because you're not thinking about the technology as much. But all the issues are the same. I would love to get a real historian, because I play amateur historian for my class. And I tell them, look, do not quote anything I say to a history professor. Because it could be, we're not saying the dates, and I may say the Medici family in the 15th century, and I may say in the 12th century. I get those numbers wrong, but it's the principle that matters.
Right. It's basically you look back at the concepts behind fintech, and then you can trace those concepts back to different historical events that might have happened way before any of the modern understandings of what fintech might be. So that's definitely interesting. And I would definitely tune into a podcast about the history of fintech. So
let me give you one other example. Lloyd's of London, it was a coffee shop that became an insurance company. Well, it just so happened that the right people developed probability theory at about the same time. And reading about the guys that came up with probability theory is really fascinating, because they were all gamblers and drunks and womanizers. So it's not like, it's not PG rated reading when you really come up with the things those guys were doing. And none of them lived very long because they were all drunks and et cetera.
The other piece that I really personally love about this topic of fintech is that the way this has evolved, it happens, of course, in lockstep with major technological evolutions. And so, you know, there's more, you've probably heard of Moore's Law, which is this idea of kind of exponential growth and processing power. And that's what's enabled things like the smartphone we carry in our pockets now to perform at such a really amazingly large, high level of compute speed to allow all these different kind of applications to be used by us, including the fintech applications in such an amazing way. I mean, and then, well, I guess more recently, there's concepts like the cloud. You'll hear about Amazon Web Services being really kind of the originator of this cloud capability. But these new technologies and the pace of their adoption is meaning that there are opportunities to create new financial services, technology, business models, companies, and the ease at which these new capabilities can be brought into the marketplace has also increased. It's much easier than ever, to the extent that students like yourself can explore creating fintech companies. And that is actually happening. We have, for the first time ever, we had a student founded company participate in our FinTech South Innovation Challenge, which we just held last week. And these students, who happen to be Georgia State students, their company is called EthioPay. It's a payment remittance capability for Ethiopian members of the Ethiopian diaspora here in the United States to pay bills and send money back to Ethiopia. And they've created this company. They have capabilities they're offering, And they were able to not only do that, which is remarkable, but they in the FinTech South Innovation Challenge, they had an opportunity to pitch their idea to multiple venture capitalists from San Francisco and from New York. So it's really just amazing what can be accomplished now for folks that that are interested in this area. So how have we done, Enrique? Have we sold you on this?
Well, I think that it's pretty clear that I need to study up on fintech history, but also I think you guys have sold me on the courses. If they're as in-depth as this conversation has been so far, then I think that it'll be very insightful for me and for any other student who wants to take it. So I encourage everybody who's listening to go. Tell me, where can they find?
GeorgiaFintechAcademy.org.
Okay.
And there's like an enroll now button, and you click on that, and it's going to take you to a further readout of the various courses that are available to learn about them. And then additionally, these courses are listed in your catalog at your institution. So you can, of course, find them there, talk to your advisor about it, and, you know, get your advisor involved in. I'm talking to the advisors all the time as well, making sure they've got the right information so that they can guide you all as students appropriately. Well, let's begin to wrap up, and as we always do every week, talk about fintech news that's caught our eye in the last week. I will start with you, Enrique. What's hit your radar?
Well, Venmo is coming out with a new credit card, actually, which is pretty exciting. They announced it last year, but basically they just now came out with them. They just launched it. So basically it's going to offer about 3% cash back on eligible purchases and also offer personalized rewards and also tools to track and manage your own finances. So I think this is really interesting because Venmo originally is sort of just a conduit for money transfer, right?
Yeah.
With the credit card, I think it's going to really develop Venmo into something completely different. So I'm excited to see what exactly the success is of the card and where they take the company. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, me too. There's Synchrony Financial has a very meaningful presence here in Georgia, up near Alpharetta is their major office outside of Connecticut. They're the ones that will actually issue the Venmo credit card. You'll see their name probably somewhere on the back of the plastic. And then the other thing that's remarkable here is that Venmo has 60 million users in the U.S. And that's remarkable. I mean, there's roughly 360, 380 million Americans. So think about that. A little less than a fifth Americans are Venmo in the Venmo user population. That's so really a remarkable number of potential customers of this credit card, which of course is important to the credit card issuers.
So Enrique, every time I hear the word Venmo, it reminds me of a guest speaker I had in class. I won't mention his name. Fantastic guy, cybersecurity expert, been in the payment industry for a long time. And he was talking about Venmo to the students. And someone asked him if it was safe. He said, well, I don't know how safe it is. So I have a separate account tied to my Venmo. And I never put like a serious amount of money in there. I call it my funny money account. And I'll never have more than $50,000 in it. So the whole class was like, wait a second. So $50,000 is just if you lose it, you don't care. He wasn't trying to be arrogant. He's just like, again, great guy. So that was on the test. What's the maximum amount of money you should have in a Venmo account? Is $50,000.
That's great.
And the class loved him. He was one of my favorite speakers ever.
That's funny.
Jonathan, how about you? News? Any news caught your eye this week?
So Macy's is buying Klarna, and this shows how fintech can kind of help maybe save companies. I know Macy's is not, most retail is not doing that great, but Klarna will allow people at checkout, basically you buy now and pay later. Mm-hmm. So they're going to take some of that financial risk off of Macy's. And for Macy's, they want to be able to sell more stuff, right? And one of the things I find fascinating about the buy now, pay later, and I don't have any inside information that their data analytics people, and it's a little bit of an ad for the data analytics class as well, but mm-hmm. FICO score is not the end all be all. So just when your credit score doesn't really reflect everything we need to know. There's a company in Germany, I forget the name of it, but there's some research on them, and they found that when you log in to buy from us, they're like maybe like a German Wayfair, the same thing, buy now, pay later, but you do it online. They figured out that the way you fill out the form, the email address you have, the time of day, and all these other characteristics predicted your ability to pay back better than, you know, the FICO score. So that's the whole nother area. And I can go a lot deeper and provide value if I can tell Macy's, Tommy Marshall is going to pay you back because he has a Gmail address, and Ricky's not because he has a Hotmail address, which actually, having a Hotmail or Yahoo address makes you less likely to pay back, indicates right. that you're less likely to pay back.
Yeah, there's... I think this is interesting, and I've been following Klarna closely for a while. And then I guess just as a point of clarification, Macy's is making a strategic investment in Klarna versus an outright purchase. But it's a really remarkable company. And, and this buy now, pay later trend is really exploded in the last 12 months. I mean, I think all major retailers are now either offering or planning to offer a buy now, pay later option in their checkout. So it's going to be another one to continue to watch.
Yeah, and they're at a zero interest rate, right, Tommy, for the this buy now, pay later, but no interest rate.
That's what's really, I think, particularly remarkable about the offering. The piece of news I'd add is there's a new digital bank that was announced last week called Greenwood that is going to be entirely focused on Black and Hispanic populations. And this is being started by some Atlanta entrepreneurs with support and endorsement from Ambassador Andrew Young, who is on his name's on several of the buildings that are around downtown Atlanta. And I was really excited to see that announcement. I mean, this digital bank space just continues to receive a lot of investment and focus, and it's growing, of course. But to see that a bank is now coming forward to be really focused entirely on Black and Latinx populations, I think is very exciting. And I know they're going to have some great success. Well, I'm going to leave it there. It's been wonderful to have you both with us this week and to dig in a bit deeper on our FinTech Academy courses. And it's just been a pleasure working with you, Dr. Godby, over the last almost year now. And then Enrique, we're going to keep working on you to see if how many of these FinTech Academy courses we can get
you. It opens up in 2 weeks, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. I'll be enrolling in one, or at least one.
You'll be in the Foundations of FinTech course, right?
Perfect. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. That's the
foundational course, right? So that'll be it.
Right.
Cool. Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy.
The Georgia FinTech Academy podcasts are available on iTunes and Spotify. To obtain additional information about the Georgia FinTech Academy, please visit our website at georgiafintechacademy.org.